This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 230 for Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight, after a long, feels like a long month, Hammond Chamberlain is back.
Yeah, March did feel like it lasted for a while, didn't it?
A bit of a slog, man. Yeah, I agree. It's also like the last throes of winter here in Nova Scotia. And I'm breaking the rule immediately and talking about weather, but the snow will not go away. It's just, it's April now. And I went for running in a t-shirt yesterday. And then the day before it was like minus five.
it's just yeah, we've got good, beautiful weather right now, but it's supposed to snow and rain all weekend.
That's insane. I watched a video. I think it was Jake Parker, an artist I follow. He's in Utah. Now, he might have been on a drive out, like, south somewhere, but he was jumping in rivers.
Yeah, it's been very nice the last little while. Yeah. It did rain and snow. The mountains still have a ton of snow. Last week was rainy and snowy. Down south was fine. Right now, my kids are outside playing in shorts and t-shirts in the park.
Wow.
And it's supposed to rain and snow this weekend. So
you're getting kind of like the mountain shifty weather.
Yeah, it's spring in Utah. It always happens.
So, just out of curiosity, these rivers and springs that I was seeing in this video, would they not be absolutely frigid this time of year with the snow melt?
Oh, heck yeah, they are. Whoever was jumping in those is insane.
There was no other people. I feel like it was just like maybe him and his assistant. I think they took an outing. I didn't see the whole family jumping in.
He might have lost a bet, maybe.
It could be. I don't know. I didn't even have the sound on. I just kind of saw, it was like, like a Facebook story, not a Facebook story, Instagram story with just different videos and stuff like that. Although I have to say it got me more excited about Nurtacular coming up this summer because, as I mentioned to you, a few weeks ago, I'm going to be vacationing beyond the convention. I'm going to be traveling down into South Utah, into Moab, and doing some Red Rock hiking. And just even the pictures of the highway as he was driving down, in, I'm assuming somewhere around that area, it looks beautiful. I'm even to the point now where I don't want to do too much research online with the big photo websites because I don't want to see it all on the net before I go.
Yeah, you don't want to spoil some of those surprises because, like, when you get out of the car at Bryce Canyon and you step out and look over the edge, it's pretty amazing. And when you walk up on Delicate Arch the first time, it kind of takes your breath away. And like Sand Dune Arch, when you play at that, there's something kind of special going in kind of blind and turning that corner and just seeing it's there. I mean, there's some really cool things.
And I've noticed a list of some of the hikes on the websites. And these are not, again, I kind of scroll quickly past the pictures and just into the details. But some of the hikes that have been recommended are the off the beaten path ones, the ones that are not the giant national park crowded, you know, because I'm going to be there kind of like July 4th, 5th, 6th. So it's a holiday. I don't necessarily want to be experiencing this grand nature with 200 other people.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I mean, there are a few of them though, like Delicate Arch is worth the crowd and the time.
Yeah.
It's something.
And the other thing too, is that, I mean, it takes a little while to get to these things, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Some of them take some work.
And I'm okay with getting up at the crack of zero dark stupid to go out and experience it. And honestly, given that I'm Canadian, I would probably be better off to hike during the morning than I would in the afternoon in the desert in July.
Yeah. Your best bet would probably be to take day hike, crack of dawn, go see it, take some cool dawn pictures, come back, shower, jump in the pool for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the plan. So, I mean, that goes out to, I'm not sure actually how many frog pants people might listen to the Citadel Cafe, but if you are a Utah native, or if you are going to be hanging around and doing some of the same, currently my vacation plans are just me. So if you want to come along, I'm okay with a hiking buddy. I'm certainly okay with someone that's local that, you know, can point me in the right direction for stuff like that. I do have Will Terry, who's an illustrator, I guess an online illustrator friend of mine now. And he's offered to take me on a hike in Little Red Rock Canyon, I think he said.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He said the only stitch might be that if it rains really heavy a couple days before, we probably won't be able to go see the whole thing because there's some water pools and stuff like that you can't traverse.
And also the flash flood warning. Flash flood's always a danger down in Southern Utah when rain happens.
He said that was the case. So, but well, I mean, I'll keep my eye on things and whatnot. But yeah. So he said that he might take me on that too. And that's again one of those things that he said is really nice because it's not a big trail. It's not something that gets a lot of crowds. You'll see people, but it's not like you're going to be in a lineup sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I'm very much looking forward to this. I have not had
and oddly enough, my wife has a lot of hiking information and stuff like that because she loves that kind of stuff.
Oh, sweet.
My idea of roughing it is a Holiday Inn without HBO. Her idea of roughing it is, you know, leaves for toilet paper and a sleeping bag under the stars.
Wow. So I'm not going to be doing that. I'm also having trouble finding a hotel in Moab that doesn't cost $200 a night. That seems to be an issue. It's probably the time of year that I'm there, probably peak season.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. There might be some kind of. Also, check to see if there's any like slick rock competitions going on or anything, because they tend to fill up quicker and be filled with people with big jeeps and climbing cars.
Right. Okay. I'm like at this point, I'm not even sure how or where I'm renting my car. I just right now. I know that I'm flying in on the Wednesday doing the Nerdtacular thing, and then I'm out that Sunday down to the valley to somewhere. I haven't sorted that out yet. I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to fly home on the 7th, which is a Friday, like the Friday after Nerdtacular,
mm-hmm.
or if I'm going to stay and fly home on the 10th, which is the Monday past, like get two weekends out of it.
Yeah.
It all depends on how much these hotels are going to cost me. Because let me tell you, the only part about this vacation that looks like it's going to suck rocks, big red Utah rocks, is my exchange rate. I get about $1.30 to your dollar.
Oh, wow.
Or vice versa. So I have to spend $1.30 to get a buck. So when I'm traveling and doing a vacation that's like, oh, this is going to cost me $2,000. No, no, no. it's going to cost me closer to $3,000.
Yeah. So I have cleared my schedule from the 28th through the 4th.
Buddy.
So the Wednesday through the Tuesday, I'm clear.
Cool. Well, I am not leaving Nerdtacular and going straight down to the South Utah to do some hiking. I want to kind of stay in the... I figured 4th of July would be kind of dumb to do that.
Yeah.
I'm planning on doing any hiking on like the 5th, 6th, 7th, that sort of idea. Which is why I don't necessarily want to fly home on the 7th. I think I want to try and push to the Saturday or the Monday. But anyway, so that not to bore people with my vacation plans, but I'm after seeing and doing a little bit more research and trying to plan things, outside of the heart-wrenching expense of it all... then I'm really excited about, well, both to see everybody in Nerdtacular, but then also to actually go on a vacation. I haven't had one in 2 years, maybe a little bit longer. So yeah, it's going to be a good time. What's new with you? I feel like it's been a month, but it's been a long month, as I said.
Let's see. Busy. I've been doing an interview series with the Artemis Women's Film Festival all month. I've done a crap ton of interviews of amazing filmmakers and people who do amazing things for women in film and women in action film. I interviewed the 2016 Student Academy Award winner with her short film Rocket. Her name was Brenna Malloy. She was just amazing.
Is this all published or is this kind of in your hopper?
Yeah, they're all out there. They're all out there.
Is it on the Beyond the Playlist feed or is it somewhere else?
It is. It's on nice. Beyond the Playlist feed. Yeah. Awesome. I've interviewed a couple of stunt women who've worked with some major players, a bunch of short film directors, and just some truly amazing people. There's a film called Quarries that's available on iTunes. I've interviewed the producer, the director, a couple of actresses from it, and they're all just great people, and it's an amazing film that looks like it was made for a whole lot more money than it was. And I've had the best luck with these interviews, and I all because of the relationship I have the woman who founded the film festival. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff. And I've enjoyed talking to every one of them. I mean, truly have.
I'm excited for you, man. I think that's really cool. Plus it's a really cool, I don't want to say cause, because it's not a cause, but like it's a really cool organization. What they're doing is very cool.
Yeah, it's their third year, and I feel like that this year went smoothly enough, and I think well enough that next year we'll be able to hammer out more of the details and be a little bit more organized, because this year it was, here's 10 names, have fun.
Mm.
And next year might be, here are these people and our honorees. Maybe we can get that set up. Right. So,
and then you're now known as the interview guy. So
yeah,
the prep can also go two ways. They can say, hey, you're going to be talking to Hammond. He will be in touch about interviewing you about your directorial or your acting or your craft or whatever it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah.
We also, it was supposed to happen tonight, but we had to do a little bit of a reschedule, but there's a Canadian, female filmmaker, or a female filmmaking team, that was going to come on the show to talk about their upcoming, short or film. I can't remember which it was.
I think it's a feature from what feature.
I saw the trailer. I just watched it once, and this was like 2 weeks ago.
I couldn't stop watching it. The trailer intrigued the crap out of
it
me.
It is. It's a very cool trailer. Again, I should probably, I wish I had, I didn't realize I was going to talk about it tonight. Otherwise, I don't have my email open on purpose. Otherwise, it dings during the show and it drives me batty. I will dig through and I'll put it in the show notes, the link to the trailer, so that you know that we're going to be talking to them in May. So the first week of May on Fiddle Cafe, we'll have a little bit of a change. I got a lot of positive feedback actually last week from the change of talking with JF DeBow about his book and then the miniatures and his tabletop gaming habit. We'll call it hobby.
JF and I are working on something that actually involves Sydney.
Oh, cool.
Too. So it's something that's still very much in its infancy, but we're getting there and it could be super cool.
That's awesome.
If it all works out, yeah.
So I'm going to have to tease him the next time I'm talking to him, because one of the things that came up on last week's show was how little time we have for all of the cool nerdy stuff we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I talk to somebody that knows GF, he's working with them on something else that he didn't mention. And it's like, dude, like, when do you sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my problem this week, is I'm exhausted. The thing is, I'm doing all of the things I'm supposed to do, including play. Like, I'm still playing Minecraft when I have some downtime. It's usually around 10 o'clock at night, just before bed. But I am making sure that I'm doing all of the things I'm supposed to do as an adult. Dishes, workout, proper work day, like all of these things. I'm, you know, not that it was ever a problem before, but I'm taking the time to check all the proper boxes. And
well, and I thought you were, when did Minecraft enter your universe? I thought you were more of a WoW dude.
Well, this is the thing. WoW is expensive. As is Lego, as I found out. I'm still very much into Lego. I'm still looking forward to my next Lego purchase, which I believe is going to be the Y-Wing Starfighter, which is out right now. Mainly because I remembered that Chapters, which is an Indigo bookstore in Canada, sells Lego. I happen to have a $25 gift certificate previously earmarked for a book, but I have more books than I know what to do with right now. So I'm thinking that the $75 Canadian Y-Wing Starfighter becomes $50 quickly. And then it becomes very affordable as in terms of like how long it'll take to build and my enjoyment and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if I've ever shared with you, but I've got this spreadsheet about piece to price and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, point being, Minecraft was a cheap substitute. It was a one-time buy of $35 to get the game. And then really it's only my time. And honestly, it's kind of had the Citadel Cafe by the throat, because I am not watching nearly the amount of television that I used to, which is not a bad thing. I'm definitely doing more creative things and having some fun in Minecraft. I was hanging out with my friend Steven and his two boys last Friday night for a little bit. That's always fun when you're playing Minecraft with like a 10 to 12 year old. They run circles around us, by the way. But, you know, Steven and I have fun kind of chatting and doing some neat stuff. And but now I'm on the cusp of like, I really want to start streaming. I just don't know if my computer can handle it.
I know two kids who will watch you religiously because they freaking love the YouTube Minecrafty crap.
And so do I. And all of it. Yeah.
And you won't be vulgar and weird. You'll just be Joel.
Well, this is the thing. Yeah, and this is the thing. And I found a couple of guys.
At least I hope he wouldn't be vulgar and weird.
No. No. Well, I don't know if I can't promise, you know, an odd semi-appropriate swear word if something explodes and kills me.
Okay.
I will be unhappy.
That is acceptable.
Yeah, that would be or if I fall from a very high height and I die. That has happened a number of times because I've built Snake Mountain in my little realm and it's very high and I have been working on it and every once in a while I'll just lose my balance and then splat, unless I land in the water. If I land in the water, it's okay, but it's still terrifying on the way down. It's ridiculous. It's kind of weird. The vertigo that it happens in Minecraft when you fall off a cliff and you're just like, oh no, your stomach drops just like a roller coaster. It's a little bit weird.
Yeah. Sydney's built a couple of roller coasters in the past.
Oh, cool.
Effectively built some roller coasters in the past. So.
It's incredible what you can do in this game. Now I don't do the creative stuff. I'm more of a traditionalist. I'm doing a survival play. And that's why I want to try doing a Let's Play. I'm not going to start all over again. I'm going to clean up the world. Because what happened was I started on a community server with Steven and his boys. And then he sent me the world save as to where I was. And now I've got that to play on my own. Because they're not sure. They're not sure if they're going to keep up with the server. Because, I mean, his boys are young and they're on a budget. And they're not really sure if it's going to hold their interest in terms of like having the server for just them. And It would be different if it was a bunch of their friends and family and all this kind of stuff. But when Steven and I, when he set it up, he just kind of used his free month to test out a realm and to show me the ropes, which I really appreciate. So so now I've got it on my own, but now I'm just trying to decide if I can stream it and have a decent frame rate. I mean, I will once I get my new computer, but until then, I don't know if I can. And in terms of like starting over and doing a Let's Play, all I'd have to do is just travel to like a new continent and just like, you know, start in a new biome or something. But so far,
yeah, you'd have your Westeros and then you'd have your little Scorpion Island or whatever the freak that's called.
Eastern Kingdoms or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to see what I can do with it. For now,
you have Snake Mountain, then you have the other one, you have Castle Grayskull.
That's the plan. Well, when I moved the folder, it was called, oh gosh. Something, the Realm of Shardia, which is a kind of a combination of the last names for everybody in Steven's family, which is kind of cool. But I changed it to Eternia when I got it. So
wow, I was making the joke not knowing you really were doing it.
Yeah, well, I didn't think about Castle Grayskull because let me tell you, Snake Mountain is still not done, and it's like the very first thing I attempted, and it is. Jai freaking enormous, and I still am not quite sure what I'm going to do with it. I ended up building a tower across from it just to kind of like give myself a break. But that, I mean, that's essentially what I've been doing. A lot of my downtime has been Minecraft and stuff like that. And then I have been watching some Minecraft YouTube. I don't remember everybody, but Mumbo Jumbo is one guy that I've been watching because I've been learning about the redstone stuff, which is really neat. But talk about a generation gap. Like, professional Mumbo Jumbo, very good YouTuber. He's not vulgar. He's funny. Like the stuff that he talks about is just so complicated and it's so gaming the system of the game. Like it's not cheating because the game lets you do it, but it's these really bizarre ways of like maximizing your input output from Minecraft. And this guy talks a mile a minute about like very, very technical stuff. So it's a tutorial, but my gosh, you'd have to watch these videos like six times to really kind of absorb anything. But wow. It just kind of makes me wonder like the kind of things that kids would watch and learn. I'm wondering if that's just the speed of all of it now. You know,
I don't know. Audrey watches this boy and girl, man and woman, couple. I don't know what they are, but they're... From everything I have heard in passing, because I find them actually kind of grating because their voices are mm-hmm. great. Not something I want in my ear holes all the time.
Yep.
But she likes them and she's like, they're nice to each other and they help each other out and they're kind. Mm. And I'm like, okay, whatever. That's fine. I don't know who they are, but she likes them. And then Sydney likes somebody else who plays by themselves and kind of talks through what they're doing so that they can recreate it on their own.
Mm, interesting.
And I think it's a female that does it. So.
Oh, cool. I haven't looked, it's funny. I've just been searching for subjects. I've not been searching for specific YouTubers and stuff. And most of what I've been finding has been guys, and young guys. But one particular tutorial, which is recommended from a few friends, was Paul Soares Jr. Now, he does do some adventures in Minecraft with his wife. He also streams a bunch of other different builder sandbox games. He's got some dad jokes. So there's a couple of like really kind of eye rolling pun sort of situations. But I have to say,
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah. Me either. I have to say his stuff has been really informative and really entertaining and usually bite sized, like between 15 and 20 minutes tops.
Can I interrupt and just say something about bite sized real fast?
Yeah.
Mike Rowe, the guy who used to do Dirty Jobs and he narrates.
I know who you mean. Yep.
Deadliest Catch. His little bite sized podcast he puts out, they're about 10 minutes each. He is awesome. Nice. He's like the new Paul Harvey.
And oh, nice.
It's the best 10 minutes you could spend listening to something in your head. So sorry, I had to throw that out there.
Is this awesome. Called Bite Size?
No, it's called That's the Way I Heard It with Mike Rowe.
Mike Rowe, okay. I remember one time there was a YouTube video where he called someone up and recorded the Grinch song as their ringtone.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, he used to be an opera singer.
Yeah, but he's got an incredible deep voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, sorry, I just...
No, I had it's to throw fine. That out I shouldn't spend the whole episode talking about Minecraft. I've been doing that for a month.
Okay, well, good.
But yeah, so I mean, Paul Soares Jr., and which I've mentioned before, but Mumbo Jumbo, if you want to learn about Redstone, you have to dig through the really complicated stuff to find his like original beginning tutorials. There was one video that was around 20 minutes long that was like everything you need to know about just getting started with Redstone. And he starts at the very, very, very basics. Like, this is a Redstone line. This is a Redstone switch. And he goes from there. He talks fast, but you can pause the video at any time or rewind it. But it was very clear. Like, all of the people that I've watched for these tutorials, when they have to slow down and explain the basics, it's very, very clear. I get it now. I can't use it in game yet because I don't have all the tools. But, the materials, but I do understand it pretty well. I'd have to do a little bit more practice. Like I'd have to do some practicum, I guess, in game, but, it's very, very informative stuff. And that's the thing I like about the game in general is that when I'm watching YouTube, I'm not necessarily just watching it for entertainment purposes. I'm actually learning, which is fun. But yeah, so that's kind of what I'm at with some of my downtime. There is one more thing we're going to talk about in a little bit. But before I get to that, I have to tell you what I've been doing with my uptime. I have some updates for anybody that is part of the Daily Paintings Kickstarter. And that is the proofs from the Daily Paintings book arrived yesterday. And we do have some finagling to do with the physical dimensions of the book. We have to try and get that right. Just a little bit of a miscommunication between myself and the printer. However, the biggest part of these proofs is like, how does the inside look? How does the 150 plus pages of art look in these books? Answer? Amazing. It looks really, really good. I'm thrilled with how the content of the books has turned out. If there's any adjustments inside the books, it's mostly just things that I missed in InDesign, a little color tweaks I have to go back and change. Probably a technical error, like, you know, this is rich black and this is just black and stuff like that, that I have to go find, but it's a handful. And for the most part, like it's just a really, really substantial book. It's heavy. It's about 2 pounds. It's got a nice hardcover to it. I'm looking forward to seeing the final, covers and everything put together, but so far it's looking good. We just have to do some adjustments on the cover. I don't think I'm going to have anything else sent to me. I think we can proceed without another proofing process. But so far it's looking phenomenal. And that leads us into the next book, which is why I've been so bloody busy.
And that, hey, you know, if you end up getting arrested, I do know people.
I know. So I'm trying to talk through it. I'm trying to just get past it, but it's Dartmouth and there's nothing I can do. Thankfully they're not coming to this building because it's not for me. They don't know I'm here. Did you see the tweet last week about the people that woke me up in the middle of the night?
I did.
No. Okay, well, that was an ambulance. That wasn't even a police car.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well.
So hopefully everybody's okay. Yep. No, my neighbors were having a drag-out screaming match at 3 a.m. And after I discerned that no one was in any peril and needed any help, my panic subsided and became fury.
Yeah.
I couldn't get back to sleep. And basically, I just decided that, you know, I'm just going to sleep in. I'm going to make a nice breakfast because that is the way to fix your problems. Because if I fix my problems with a cricket bat, I will get arrested. And I don't have time for that.
Yep.
So,
and pancakes make everything better.
They do. And I had pancakes on Monday. So, you know, again, hunky dory. All's good. One of the other reasons why I'm so busy is that on top of trying to finagle and get the last little bits finished off with Piper's book and get that printing, we're also preparing Ink Tank, which is Rob Momart's black and white art book that's coming out with Forge Publishing. I'm going to say soon. We can't announce a date yet, but if you want to follow Forge Publishing on Twitter or Instagram, if you want to follow Rob Momart's, that's 2 M's AERTS. On Instagram, you'll be able to find out a little bit more about that. You can also subscribe to the Forge Publishing newsletter, which is at forgepublishing.com. And that is going to be the place.
I would like to get Rob on my show sometime, maybe when this Kickstarter is going, so we could do an interview and
absolutely
get that going.
And I will tell you our plans off mic.
Yeah, because I think when I was on the Christmas show of Comics Coast to Coast with him, we actually had talked about it in passing.
Yes.
But nothing ever really firmed up because everyone was just head down, butt in the air busy.
Oh, yeah. Well, Christmas, and then Christmas for you is like Christmas birthday craziness.
Yeah,
and then with Rob, we had planned a much earlier Kickstarter, but the delay on Piper's book, which is all in the name of quality and getting this thing to be beautiful, and it's well on its way. I'm really, really happy with it. But it's just taking longer on the calendar, which means that we had to delay Rob's book Kickstarter launch until this thing is done. So I don't know.
And also, though, you're getting the process out of the way. So now it's smoother for the next one. And so by the third one,
absolutely,
You'll be able to poop these out without even thinking about it.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say not even thinking about it, but the communication with the printer is going to be a lot firmer because essentially, I'm a little bit inside baseball with Forge Publishing, we're not going to be changing the formula a whole lot, I don't think, with these art books. The content is going to be vastly different as you travel from artist to artist. But if they have a landscape hardcover coffee table book, or if they have a portrait size book that's something around the lines of like a graphic novel, not that we're publishing graphic novels, but that format, that vertical format, there's really only going to be a couple of choices. We're not going to get into too much craziness in terms of like each book being wildly different in terms of how it's put together in terms of the materials. So hopefully as things go forward, it's going to be like, you know, communicating with the printer who like, yes, just like book X or just like book Y, we're putting this content in that template and done. And it should make getting these things to the backers a lot faster, which is what everybody wants, right?
Yep.
Anyway, so things are going very, very well with Forge. Just sign up for the Forge Publishing newsletter if you want to be on the absolute pulse of when Ink Tank goes live on Kickstarter, because there will be some early bird rewards. So if that's you, if that's what you want, then sign up for the newsletter. I promise you there's no spam. It's supposed to be monthly, and I think I send it out every 2 months. So it's not something that's going to bombard your inbox. So that brings us into what we've been watching, and I know that you have got some thoughts about Iron Fist. So
I mean,
before I get too into my kind of my spiel, like you are kind of prep everybody. We're not going to do any spoilers, but you're about 6 or 7 episodes in.
Yeah, I'm 6 or 7 in. Yeah.
So I'm about 4 or 5, I think.
They just had their encounter at the pier.
Okay. That's where I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I can say that I feel like this show is being carried by the female actresses.
Yes.
The dudes, both good and bad. So Iron Fist himself, Mr. Rand, reminds me of Titanic era Leonardo DiCaprio. If you close your eyes, you can hear it.
A little bit.
And it kind of drives me bonkers because I keep waiting to look up and see Leonardo, but it's not. It's this other guy who's pretending to be Leonardo. And he's not a super dynamic actor. He's got like two speeds. He's got like thoughtful slow, and then he's got like casual hanging out guy.
Mm.
And there are times where neither one of those fit. The brother, not a good actor. He's got one speed, which is stone-faced and moodless.
So, and I think some of that might be direction. because
okay,
I feel like not only because I agree with you, but I also feel like his character is just so one note.
Yeah, he's one dimensional to a fault.
Yes, no, I agree. Yeah,
and the other male actor that's kind of part of the story that I won't go into.
Right,
he's equally as boring.
Right.
Hello.
You mean yeah? No, I hear you. You mean Harold Meacham?
Yes.
So, I mean, we talked about them by names. There's Danny Rand.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Colleen Wing is the
instructor girl.
Instructor at the dojo. I mean, this is all first episode stuff. This
yeah. Okay. Not... I just I didn't want to know where people were going to be. No, so
fine. I mean, it's been out for a week now. So yeah.
So the sister, Joy, the instructor, yep. The instructor lady. And the nurse from all of the series.
Oh yeah, Rosario Dawson is fantastic.
They are carrying the show on their backs. In fact, I feel like their backs probably hurt at the end of production from carrying the rest of the production.
Yeah, I agree. I like Colleen Wing. She's played by Jessica Henwick. I like her a lot. I'm not crazy about the way that they're writing her, but I enjoy her as a character.
Yeah, Joy took a while for her to warm up, but I could tell she was already going to be more dynamic than anybody else.
She's got some sides. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, we can't get into it because of spoilers, but you definitely see a little bit more. Well, and this is the thing. Colleen Wing, Joy Meacham, they're changing as the plot develops around them. The characters are then reacting to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ward Meacham is like a true north. Like, it doesn't matter what happens around him. He doesn't change at all. He doesn't alter course. He doesn't flow with anything. Same with Danny Rand, as a matter of fact. He's not reacting, but he's just on his own path. But it's unwavering. Like there's no bouncing around with it.
But even there's when no there's certain rebel, even when there's certain revelations about what he's supposed to be doing or who he is, mm-hmm. he's delivering it like a casual Leonardo DiCaprio, mm-hmm. and not like a guy who's been summoned to fight the hand and save the world.
So this is my question. I don't know if it's something we might have access to in terms of the knowledge base. Maybe the chat room might be able to help us out. But this felt very much like a pilot episode. I feel like they made one or two before they got the funding to do the rest. Because I found that the first episode or two I was really concerned that I wasn't going to like it. I wasn't sure it was going to pick up. But then at the end of like episode three, I was in. I was on board. Like all of a sudden, the pace picked up. The character started to develop a little bit, mostly Joy Meacham and Colleen Wing. And I was like, okay, sweet, I'm in. And I am. Like I'm enjoying it. It's not perfect, but I am absolutely enjoying it. And I'm just wondering if they might have had a little bit of a, we're not really sure if we can pull this off kind of first episode or two. And then they just kind of found a little bit of a better stride.
I'm still really struggling with the overall pace.
It's slow, but it's the Netflix slow, and that's kind of what they're doing.
And I'm also kind of struggling with the fact that we were introduced to kind of the main baddies so early, and they're not so bad. They're just in the way.
Yeah, I think the real meat of the bad guy stuff is the stuff about the hand, which is again not a spoiler.
Yeah, and I get that, but even at that point now, we understand who they are and we understand what's going on.
And if you watch Daredevil, then you know that they're badasses, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 But again, with everything that's going on in that particular neck of the woods, you'd think that Punisher would have shown up at the pier already.
Yeah.
And you would think that Daredevil would have shown up at the pier already. And you would think that Luke Cage and Jessica Jones would have been there beating up people left and right that are selling that synthetic thing on the streets. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes the logic of the Marvel Universe kind of outdoes itself because the city is so populated with people that have their ears to the ground that you think the Avengers Tower would light up and, hey, we have this thing on the street. Go send Hawkeye to put it down.
Yeah.
Or where's Spider-Man at? He can take care of this. It's small time. I mean, that particular neck of woods is so crowded with people with abilities and superpowers and all that stuff that this pier would have been decimated 10 minutes after it was open.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing that, I mean, when Marvel decides to set like all of their stuff in New York City, that's just comic books. I mean, that's something you're going to have to roll your eyes at and be like, all right, well, I'm on board. I feel like they did explain the timeline a bit, because when Rosario Dawson shows up, she talks about what happened previously in season 2 of Daredevil, I think. Or maybe it was Luke.
Yeah, Cage. She did. Yeah, yeah. She references it.
She references Daredevil. And then in Daredevil, they reference, I want to say, the stuff that happened around Ultron. So the Avengers were not in the city. They were dealing with that. So that they kind of explain that away. But I don't know where they are or what time, like how soon after all that kind of stuff. Iron Fist is taking place.
Well, like Jessica Jones' lawyer is in this one. She's a prominent character in this one.
Yeah, and she's in a Trinity. Couple things. Yeah.
Yeah, Trinity's in this one. And I keep waiting for her to call Neo and just say, hey, dude, come help us out.
And you know what? But it's Carrie Ann Moss, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's a good actor. She's a very good actor.
Once again, the female's carrying the show.
I agree. Like another very strong female role. I actually enjoy her sense of humor in this. It's not like laugh out loud funny, but there's some smirks that happen.
Yeah. Well, and maybe I'm more sensitive to it because of the series of interviews I've been doing.
And that could be it too.
But I'm very much aware of how the female actresses in this are doing the lion's share of the lifting.
Yep. And hey, you know what else? They're not wearing super tight clothing, leotards, low cut shirts. There's no costumes, so there's none of that bullshit. But even when it is kind of like tighter clothing, it's appropriate. It's business suits for Joy, or it's sweatpants, like yoga pants and a sports bra, because Colleen Wing is, you know, she's a martial arts instructor, so she's in gym gear.
When she's out doing her thing, she's usually wearing a hoodie while she's doing it.
When they're out doing stuff, it's a black hoodie or a white hoodie or whatever. I'm not familiar enough with the comics to know if Colleen Wing is supposed to be anybody substantial, and whether or not they're fluffing that up, or whether they're just kind of making her up as they go. Like, I mean, whether she's for the Netflix show or whether she's a real character. So far I like her. The one beef that I have is something that unfortunately I saw pointed out. I can't remember where I read it. And that is that the martial arts in the show is a bit less to be desired. It's not as good as it should be or could be. And I only agree with that half the time. There has been some really cool moments where I was like, wow, crap, I didn't know he could move that fast. I mean, I understand that it's all, you know, TV, but it really felt like this guy studied with monks for 15 years and somebody just tried to punch him and he just kind of like woofed out of the way and the guy fell on his face. Like stuff like that.
Check out what Sam just put in the chat room.
Okay, what's going on? Oh, Colleen Wing is a real character. All right, she's
Misty Knight. Had a series called Daughters of the Dragon.
Okay, cool. Yeah, as I was saying, the fight stuff is good. It's not like crazy, not Jackie Chan or any of the like real big martial arts movies. And I think this is a decision that benefits the show, is that they chose better actors over master martial artists.
Yeah, but if you remember Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and all of them so far have had at least one long single shot, unedited single shot of a fight scene doing something. And this is yet to happen in this episode, in this series.
No, it hasn't. Yeah, it hasn't happened.
And I think it's because they're hiding the weaknesses of Danny, and they're trying to emphasize the action that Colleen brings.
Well, I don't even find that Colleen Wing, her character, is super authentic on screen. It doesn't feel, it feels more choreographed than it feels any kind of real.
But she's moving at more speed than he is. Whenever he's fighting, he's always either moving real slow or in slow motion to hide the fact that he's not moving very fast.
Yeah, there's a couple, they seem to slow things down at inappropriate times. Like it's a slow-mo dramatic, like, boom, you know, bullet time punch or something like that. It's like, I don't need to see that. I'd much rather you just use some quick cuts to make it look like he hit the guy really fast, you know? I appreciate that when he turns on his fist or when he focuses his chi, that, you know, you have to kind of do the whole, you know, superhero moment thing, and that's fine. But I feel like he seems to have a lot of trouble doing it for someone that's supposed to be like the Iron Fist. He's like, well, I have to concentrate real hard. It's like, well, I get that, but aren't you supposed to be really good at this by now?
And it's even like, some of that's inconsistent. Sometimes he thinks about it and sometimes it just happens reflexively.
Yeah.
So let's keep it consistent here, fellas.
Yeah, there's some back and forth there. And those are the kind of little wobbles that are not show breaking for me. They're just little things that you notice, but you can kind of forgive it, you know, as things go on, because you've got more interesting conversations and characters and stuff like that. And again, I would much rather have someone like Colleen Wing, I'm trying to remember the actor's name, I had Jessica Henwick, doing her acting and doing her thing and be good at martial arts and be, you know, believable on film, as opposed to like someone that is masterful on film but then can't act their way out of cardboard box, because that to me would rip me right out of it. Like if they were fantastic in fight scenes, but the moment they had to do some sort of like subtle flirting with Danny, they just all fell apart. Like that to me would really be terrible.
And the one thing I can say is that, I think Danny Rand, Iron Fist Man, will be
Finn Jones.
Yes. Well, I have a feeling that that character will be better suited as part of a team than carrying an entire story arc. It's kind of like why we haven't had like a Hawkeye standalone yet, is because he's better as part of a team than he is as a standalone character at this point.
Yeah, and I feel like I've mentioned this in the show before too. Like we're talking about like the B team of the B team.
Yeah. Oh right? Yeah.
I mean, Daredevil is the big name here. Everybody else is just kind of like runners up to form this like kind of wrecking ball crew of miscreants, right?
They're the ones that the Avengers call when they need their garbage taken out.
Nice. Well, I'm wondering too, because I mean, the fight scenes and all of this stuff is all choreographed. Like, I mean, I get that it's not real. Why do the Daredevil scenes not bug me and other people as much as the stuff in Iron Fist?
And I can tell you that just my personal opinion is the fighting style in Daredevil is far more organic. It's more rough and tumble. It's more
visceral. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more up close and elbows and
yeah.
Make do with what's around you kind of fighting.
Yeah, it's more Batman.
Than this kind of straight up, you know, very highly choreographed martial arts.
Yeah. Now, I appreciate the nod to like kung fu movies where like the guys in the hallway, they all pull the hatchets out from underneath their sleeves.
Yes.
And then Danny kind of like puts one arm above his head and then flexes his wrist out. And he almost kind of says like, come here, you know, like that kind of stuff. I appreciate the nods to the kung fu movies. And I have to say that it's kind of enjoyable, but it does when it happens in a fight, it's weird.
Yeah.
Like when he has time to say, I'm switching from tiger to crane, like in a fight, you're like, no, dude, just beat the snot out of him. We will be happy. You can explain it all in a funny joke later, but don't do it mid fight.
And all it's made me want to do is go back and watch some of those movies from the 70s.
Mm. Yeah. I want to go back and watch like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and stuff like that.
That's not from the 70s.
I know.
I'm talking about the classic.
Oh, yeah, like the kung fu.
Like Hong Kong cinema stuff from the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't like the old ones. The one thing that I wanted to comment on, which I found distracting, but I have come to appreciate, is the Tron-esque soundtrack. It's very digital.
Yeah.
It's not at all, you know, Asian sounding when he kind of like hums up his fist or gets into trouble or whatever. It tends to be a little bit more techno. Now there is some Asian influence in the way that like the different notes that they're playing, but the instruments are all very, very digital, and it sounds an awful lot like the Daft Punk soundtrack from Tron Legacy.
It also sounds a lot like the music from Kung Fury, which also takes away from me a little bit.
See, I haven't seen Kung Fury.
No, it's the best. It's the best 35 minutes you'll spend on Netflix.
I think you've recommended it before.
But it's
grown on me. At first I thought it was a little bit distracting, but it's grown on me. I also appreciate the opening. I find that that's really cool.
It's very reminiscent of Daredevil for
it
me.
It is, but it's shorter. It's a lot shorter.
Well, it has to because it's because they have a cold open, which Daredevil never did.
Right.
At least on season one, they didn't, because you could binge watch it without with only having to watch the credits once.
No. This one. See, in Canada, or at least on the device that I'm watching on, I have to watch the credits each time.
Oh, see, and on my Apple TV, if I start like, I don't know, what's another Netflix original? The Carrie Bryan, Tori,
sure,
Grant Imahara show, that one, the White Rabbit Project or whatever it is. You start it, you watch the credits. If you hit watch the next one now, it sucks you in like 10 seconds, so you skip the intro.
Hmm. Yeah, for this one, I normally watch when I'm eating, so it's fine. I get to kind of start my meal while the credits are rolling, and I'm okay with it. It gets me through. So before we wrap this up, I noticed that you've got a book pick, and we don't often have something cool to talk about as far as books, but we did last week, so I feel like we have to try to keep that up. So
I've got two that I'll do real fast.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's okay. I mean, take your time.
And both are audiobooks. First one is Not Dead Yet by Phil Collins. I bought the audio version of it because it's actually read by Phil Collins, and you can tell that parts of this stuff get really personal because you can tell that he responds to it as he's reading it.
Interesting.
And it's a really, really good book, and he tells some really funny stories. He tells some very personal stories, talks about his time battling with alcoholism and addiction, and he's very honest about his marriages and the relationship with his kids and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he really lays it all out there. And it's kind of admirable how honest he is during the book.
Hmm. That's really cool. I'm having a deja vu moment, but I feel like it was not on the show, but maybe just on the personal Skype call that you had recommended it to me before.
Yeah. It's something I really, really think everyone should get if you're any fan of Phil Collins or Genesis or any of that kind of stuff. Cause he talks about his investment in the Tarzan musical and how that kind of worked out and didn't work out and all that kind of stuff. It's really, really good.
Cool.
And the other one I'll do real quick, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this one before, but special effects artist Steve Johnson, he designed Slimer from Ghostbusters, and he's worked on the original Predator before they made it the Stan Winston design, where Jean-Claude Van Damme was going to be it in the woods. I mean, he's done tons and tons of stuff. He wrote a book called Rubberhead, and to basically sum it up, it's fear and loathing in special effects, because he talks very honestly about his substance abuse and his vices, and it's very disjointed, but in the end it makes sense. And he again reads this, and it's great because
trend.
As he's reading it, he actually pulls out from reading and gives you commentary on what he's written. And like in the introduction, he's reading along this foreword by John Landis, and he stops halfway through and kind of defends himself against the Ford, and then continues reading the John Landis stuff. And he does that throughout the film, where he'll stop and give you commentary on what he's either about to read or what he just read. And it's awesome because it's a very honest look into this heyday of life and special effects and this troubles and the trials and tribulations he went through, and how he's trying to kind of come out clean on the other side. It's another really, really good one. And I highly recommend finding the audiobook.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'll have to look. I definitely want to try the Phil Collins one, because I used to listen to a lot of Genesis when I was younger. One of my favorite bands growing up. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you. If you go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, then you can find a way to support the show, should you so desire. If you do that, then you become a patron, and then you become part of the patron-only Slack chat. You get to hang out with myself and Wouter and Hammond and all kinds of cool people over the course of the week, talking about pretty much what we talk about on the show, but in a little bit more of a, we'll call it a subdued, more of a laid-back environment. Head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you enjoy the show, then support us and help us keep the lights on the server, the time it takes to edit, all that kind of stuff. It's a huge help, actually, on the part of a podcaster to have some support on Patreon. So I thank you very much for those that are already out there doing that. My pick this week is Lego. Imagine that. And color, speaking, it's funny that
color I me surprised.
Tron, yeah, funny that I mentioned Tron earlier. Well, there's a bit of a news break this week where LEGO Ideas is no longer accepting original LEGO Ideas designs based on licenses or based on existing LEGO licenses. I'm not entirely sure of the whole story. I only kind of caught a glimpse of it. But essentially, if you want to see a Star Wars build, some people would do like their own Star Wars build and then submit that to LEGO. The idea behind LEGO Ideas is that if you get 10,000 supporters on LEGO Ideas, then LEGO will review your set and potentially make it as an official set, and then you get part of the revenue, which is really cool because LEGO does huge business. But they're no longer doing it with licensed sets. I don't know what that means for the Tron Legacy cycle, which is my pick. And it's not a big build, but man, does it ever look neat. I think it was just some really cool use of Tron kind of architecture of LEGO bricks, the vapor trail or the light trail behind the bike, the minifig scale, like all of it just looks really, really cool. It's definitely just like a little bit of desk or bookshelf porn, you know, in terms of toys just to kind of have there. I really like it. I hope, because it has reached its 10,000 supporter mark, I hope it doesn't fall under this new decision to no longer do licensed stuff. I'm hoping that either LEGO already had the license or that they don't and this doesn't really qualify. I'm not really sure how this goes. The good
news, it's very cool looking though.
Yeah, the good news is that LEGO does have a very strong relationship with Disney, which owns Tron. So, you know, there could be some hope there, but I'm not entirely sure. It depends on when the 10,000 supporter mark was reached. The article that I'm linking in the show notes is from April 4th. That's yesterday. So I don't know when that happened and when LEGO's cutoff is. There was some fine print in terms of like, well, what if you've already hit 10,000? Like, what if you had a really cool Ghostbusters custom build that got picked that hit your $10,000 mark or 10,000 supporter mark 6 months ago? Right, you're still not made by LEGO. You still haven't been reviewed, but you know the legalities haven't changed. So I'm not exactly sure what that means. But either way, it's a really cool little build. The brickfan.com is where I found the link, but I will have a solid link and a photo in the show notes. So that's it for me. What's your pick, Hammond?
A couple years ago, for summer break, me and Audrey and Sydney all built marshmallow shooters out of PVC pipe.
Nice.
And I have found that now amplified into the 25 millimeter sonic blaster cannon. And I am kind of jonesing to get some time off and get the pieces and build one of these myself. And it's you're not messing around. It's the real deal when it comes to actually doing putting some distance between you and your projectile you chose to stick in there.
Okay.
And my video that I chose is the actual video on how to build one for yourself.
Wow.
And
they make it look like a gun too.
Yeah. It's a real piece of work. And one of the videos, after they build it, they actually start shooting like chunks of dry ice into jugs of water and shooting nails with fins on them into bottles of Coke and stuff like that. It can do some serious damage, but I'd really want to build one.
So so it's not just shooting marshmallows then?
No, they're shooting all kinds of stuff out of this thing.
Mm. So what powers it?
It's got a little bit of a flammable gas, like a fume, and then a sparker at the top. And then punches it's like a potato gun, miniaturized and then amplified.
Jeez,
because potato guns are like bazookas.
Yeah,
no, this is more like a sniper rifle.
Yeah, this looks dangerous. I'm gonna be the old curmudgeon in the room and be like, nope, not for me.
But I'm also wondering if there's a way you could do it. See, they've got the little air pump at the bottom that's supposed to pump out all the dirty air that had already been ignited,
mm-hmm.
and then create a clean canister of air. I'm wondering if there's a way you can actually use that pump to compress air and then use the like a the trigger to release a valve. Right. To release the compressed air instead of a flammable explosion in the canister. Yeah,
turn it into an airsoft gun as opposed to
Yeah.
I mean, shooting marshmallows is cute and all. Like that I find kind of funny. But once you start putting fins on nails, then you're like, nope.
Yeah.
Now you're into the police are at your door territory.
my marshmallow shooter, we were doing mini marshmallows, but I was able to develop such velocity because of just my ability to blow that I actually bruised people I was hitting with them, and I was banned from playing with the marshmallow shooter.
Oh my God. I could see the argument happening now, like, Hammond, you suck, and you're like, well, actually no.
Yeah, no, I for whatever the skill set is, maybe it's the harmonica playing, maybe it's the years of running, I don't know, but I'm able to develop enough pressure and velocity with the way I shoot my marshmallow that Sydney, my wife, and Audrey were all bruised with mini marshmallows, which is the dumbest thing on the planet, but I'm no longer allowed to play with them.
Yeah, you're a monster. That's amazing. Oh, man. We'll have the link for this 25mm sonic blaster cannon in the show notes as well. Now, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and tell us how many people you have bruised with a marshmallow gun. Find us on Twitter and Facebook by name. And hey, why not check us out on iTunes? You can just look up my name on iTunes, Joel Duggan, look up The Citadel Cafe on iTunes. Leave us a review. It's a great place for the show to get some new listeners. And I haven't mentioned it in a few weeks. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. That includes some upcoming guest appearances at Spring Geekquinox here in Halifax, at the East Coast Comic Convention. No, East Coast Comic Expo, pardon me. They have a very confusing acronym. I need to speak to them about that. In Moncton, in May. So that's going to be May 23rd, something like that. No, April 23rd and 22nd, and May 19th at the East Coast Comic Expo in Moncton. And also look for me at the Dartmouth Comic Arts Festival later this summer. Dates and confirmation to be announced, but lots of stuff going on. And of course, by the time I'm in Moncton, I'm really hoping to have a copy of Daily Paintings with me because the book should hopefully, knock on wood, be out by then. So in the meantime, check out forgepublishing.com and all that we're up to over there. That's it for me, Hammond. Where can people find you online?
You can check me out at Soundography, The Soundography on Twitter. I'm J Hammond C on Twitter. Check out soundography.com or jhammondc.com.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap. But you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.